Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of True Crime on Easy Street. It's the Sunday after Valentine's Day as we sit in the studio and record. Kelly, Katie, did your husbands remember the holiday?
Yes.
They did?
Oh, yeah.
No details? Never mind.
I'll tell you. I got some chocolate and some flowers and a bath pillow.
I love my bath pillow.
Oh, that does sound awesome. Fun. Katie?
Nice. I got a very nice gift, but it was intertwined between graduation, Valentine's, and studying for the bar, encompassed into one gift.
Hit us with it. What was it?
I don't think she wants to tell us what it is.
I got a little diamond bangle bracelet.
That's gorgeous.
From we shop local around here.
Yeah, there you go. Excellent.
Howard Jeweler is not a sponsor. They could be.
But they could be.
That's a gorgeous. Yes. That is a gorgeous
Speaking
bracelet.
Of local.
Stop. Hold on.
That's where I was going.
Okay, go.
You want me to do it?
Yeah. No,
you want to do it?
No, you go.
Speaking of local, we have a good friend of the show in the studio with us today. Cade Gossett is here.
Hey,
hello,
Cade.
Say hello.
Hey, Cade.
Hello. I'm excited to be here.
Now, how did you do with Valentine's? Did you do good?
I think so.
If we talked to your wife, she would say you did good?
I think so.
Or are you just now remembering that yesterday was Valentine's Day?
No, I was prepared. I got a couple of things for some home projects for my wife that we're doing.
Don't tell me vacuum cleaner, because she's not going to like that.
Ooh. No, not vacuum cleaner.
Okay. Ooh, that's rough. Yeah, okay. Good for you, Cade.
So today we're going to talk about, we've talked about this topic before on this show. In fact, we did a four-part series. How long ago has that been now? 3 years ago?
Well, it's been a minute.
When we first talked about the Murdoch case from South Carolina.
You don't have season episode number off the top of your head?
I do not, because of something we talked about just a minute ago. It's all Anyway, no, I do not.
I want Scott to know, he has access to the back end of our podcast. He can go see everything. Mm-hmm. And he's trying to look at it like a listener and...
I want to purposely look at it like a listener so that if there's a problem with it, I see it and we can fix it.
Well,
that's the way I read the newspaper every week. I don't look at what I send to the printers. I look at what comes back from the printer.
I guess I should say he looks at our host platform, which we love our new host platform.
Yeah,
we do. Yes, we do. Mm-hmm.
But that's not where people listen. Pull up Spotify like a normal person.
All right, fine. I'll try to do better next time.
Apple iTunes, we're on there.
Anyway, back to the matter at hand.
Who are you, by the way?
Oh, my name is Scott Wright. I am a mediocre journalist.
Kelly Turner, not a doctor.
Katie Givens, still not a lawyer.
And Cade Gossett is a lawyer.
Yes, yes, he is.
Every now and then, we like to call in an actual expert.
Yeah.
And
Cade Gossett,
so today's
is
that day.
Barred in two states.
That's right.
That's right.
Uh-huh. And one of them is a big deal with today's topic.
That is correct.
So I promise we're getting there. Go ahead.
That was a perfect segue into what we're going to talk about. Oh,
quick
there's
shout
a shout out for today.
I know the clock is ticking. I hear it.
No.
Gary Bale from the Chicago area sent us a lovely email and a couple of suggestions.
Is that the Gary Bale who lives close to Wisconsin? Who is a fan of this show?
Yes.
I've heard of him.
Thank you, Gary, for listening. We appreciate it. And we put both of your suggestions on the list, and we are going to do that.
We love suggestions. Yep. So keep them coming. If you're listening and you've never reached out to the show, truecrimeoneasystreet@gmail.com.
Yep.
Follow us on Facebook and Instagram, and let us know if there's something you want to hear, and we'll put it on the list.
Perfect.
Now, this one has been on the list for a while now, the Murdoch case.
Yes.
There's been a development. Mm. Cade texted me last week. I did not know about it yet and said, hey, there's a development. And I mentioned it to you guys. Mm-hmm. And Kelly said, hey, I'm pretty lazy. Why don't we get Cade to come on the show and talk about that so I don't have to do anything? And here we are.
No. Here's what actually happened.
Uh-oh.
Kelly had the flu last week. I thought I had the flu earlier this year.
No,
I didn't. What I had last week was the flu.
Capital F.
Oh, my gosh. So that's what it was.
All right.
And
well,
so it worked out. So here we are. Cade, I'm so excited to hear about this update and hear your take on it.
Yeah, we're going to turn off our mics and listen to you.
Yep.
Well, I want y'all's input into it. I know that y'all did a whole month on it. So
yeah, we'll never forget that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I won't.
Murdoch May. That's what it was.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
All right, man, go ahead.
All right. Well, do you want me to start kind of just like a backstory?
Yeah, just give us,
perfect.
Yeah, because I've forgotten most of it by now, so I think we could all use a refresher course.
Definitely.
Okay, so I won't delve too deep into it because there's a lot. You could do another month on it.
Don't give Kelly any ideas, please.
Mm. I'll just kind of go through the timeline of kind of what happened and where we're at today. So we're talking about the Murdoch family. And as y'all said, I'm licensed in two states, one of those being South Carolina, where this crime and this family was in power for generations. So how I kind of got into this was the summer before I started law school in Charleston, South Carolina, I woke up one day and I saw that a prominent South Carolina lawyer's son and wife had been murdered. And like I said, it was right before I started law school. And so I wanted to check that out and see what was going on with that.
And that was when it first got on your radar? Okay.
Right, right. Wow. And that was June of 2021.
So like right when it happened, before it hit like really mainstream.
Right, right. I think it was Daily Mail or some kind of, you know,
yep.
that pops up. I saw that was June 8th. It was actually my birthday too.
Oh.
So I was checking that out. And got interested in it because I was about to go to law school in Charleston, South Carolina. So June 7th, 2021, Maggie and Paul Murdoch were shot and killed at the Moselle property that had been in the Murdoch family name. Alex Murdoch, the father, called 911, and he initially becomes the grieving husband, father. He was a very prominent attorney, and that's kind of what'll turn out later, will be very involved in this.
All right, so
that was we've heard the call, the 911 call. You can Google that if you haven't heard that. You can just Google it and listen to him talking to the 911.
And that ended up being I think that was a key piece of evidence, but I'm not going to spoil anything on purpose at least. So,
and this is a huge sprawling property that they own.
Right.
And you can also look at the diagram and see where the two bodies were found. And it's huge, this place. Have you ever seen it up close?
It was a hunting lodge, right?
Yeah, it's huge. I think it was like, it was a ton of acres.
Several hundred.
Several times since then.
Mm-hmm.
But most of it was swampland too. So obviously with the investigation, it was really hard to investigate that property with it being so big, swampland.
Right.
And things like that.
Right.
All right. So keep going.
So that was the first kind of anybody like us, the outside world, that was the first kind of thing that we would see. So then I was following the investigation, and then things started happening left and right. So the next thing that happened is we see that Alec Murdoch has been shot Labor Day weekend.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Yes.
And initially when I saw this, I thought, oh, somebody's trying to kill him just like they did his wife and son.
I think that might have been what he was thinking too, right?
Right.
Well, it was what everybody was thinking. I was like, holy crap, who did they make mad?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then as it turns out, we also see just a little bit after that, he has been fired or resigned from his law firm that his family started. That at the time, it was called PMPED Law Firm. That's just the name of a lot of the partners.
Right.
The Murdoch family started that. And then, so that's kind of the first thing is like, okay, he's been fired and all this is going on. But you know what? There's more to this story. Then we go back and we start hearing things that a lot of South Carolina probably heard that's familiar with that community.
Right.
Because it's a very small community, like center.
Kind of like here.
It is. And this story could have happened here. I mean, it's a small, close-knit community, and a lot of people didn't start hearing about this until a lot of these events started to unfold.
And I think a lot of communities have, especially around our size anyway, there's that prominent family or two or three, and this was one of those prominent families. And what was the county again?
The city that the trial took place in is Walterboro.
Okay.
In Hampton County.
I knew you were going to say something that sounded familiar. That's it. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But it's close to Beaufort. A lot of people have probably heard of Beaufort.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
That's where one of the military bases is located. So a lot of people are probably familiar with that area.
Okay.
And when we did all of our episodes, there was one episode where we sort of went back and talked about the legacy of this family and how they got into power. And everybody in this area knew who this family was.
Right.
The world is just now learning who they are.
Right.
At this time you're talking about, but they knew very well. They were infamous, right?
Right, right. And And as things start to come out, you hear more and more about this family that not a lot of people from that area, unless you're from that area, would have heard about. And one of those things being, you learn about the February 2019 boat crash.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It kind of led to everything that happened after this. And in that boat crash, it involved Paul Murdoch that had just been killed in June of 2021. He was the alleged driver in that boat crash. And y'all have covered this, but there were several teenagers on that boat with him.
And he was, what, 19 at the time?
Right.
Ish?
Right.
Okay.
And so there's this boat crash. A young girl, Mallory Beach, is thrown from the boat. They find her body, I think it was a week later. And then Paul Murdoch is subsequently charged with, I think it was reckless boating. I forget the exact term,
right.
But resulting in death or great bodily injury. And then COVID happens. So right. That kind of pushes back the proceedings. And he wasn't set to go to trial until after he passed away. So obviously with him passing away, those charges went away. All right. And so with that boat crash, besides the criminal charges, the Beach family and the other victims in the boat crash also filed civil lawsuits against Alec Murdoch, Paul Murdoch, and some of those family members, because Paul used a fake ID to purchase alcohol that led to that boat crash. They also sued a bar there in Beaufort where they had purchased some shots. I think y'all talked about that a little bit.
I think so, yeah.
There's a lot of camera footage of him on the dock at that area. You can see how drunk he is. And I think there was some footage from inside the bar.
Right.
If you watch the documentary on this family, I think is it Netflix or HBO?
I'm sure you could find any streamer.
It's one of the two, and I can't remember which one it is, but it shows all this footage, and it covers this particular topic very well, this Mallory Beach situation.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of documentaries. There's some that's way more dramatized than others, like the Hulu one.
Yeah.
Is a lot of speculation. It's kind of behind the scenes look, but we don't know if all of that's true.
Yeah, the one I watched was camera footage, facts,
interviews
with people, people involved.
That one I believe you're talking about would be the Netflix
one.
Is
it? Okay.
And that Netflix one actually came out during the trial.
Okay.
So I attended, I think it was like the fourth day of the trial in Walterboro.
I remember you telling me that.
And there were still seats available in the gallery. But when that Netflix documentary dropped, people were camping out the next day to try to get a seat
in the
small courtroom.
So did you only get to go that one day?
I was still in class, I skipped class that day to attend. So I couldn't really afford to miss any other class anyways.
But right.
I wasn't going to camp out or anything.
Yeah, right. Gotcha.
So going back to, before that boat crash, and I'm just going to mention this because I think you all talked about it and there was some speculation, but just to give everybody an overview of what was going on with this family. In 2015, a man named Stephen Smith passed away on the roadside around this same area. And there was a lot of rumor, speculation that this could be tied to the Murdoch family. However, that none of that has ever been substantiated. Buster Murdoch is also filed a defamation suit, and it was settled, I think, with one of the big companies. Basically, they were trying to say that he was involved in it.
Right.
So there's never been any kind of arrest made in that case.
And Buster is the older brother of Paul, right?
The couple had two sons,
okay.
Buster and Paul. And I forgot, what was the wife's name? I just blanked.
Maggie,
thank you.
And I did the episode about Stephen Smith, and it's just a foggy memory, but the speculation was that somehow, perhaps, Buster might have been involved in this mysterious... He was found on the side of the road. His car was a few miles away with a gas cap missing. It just looked really suspicious
and
weird.
He had been hit. Someone hit
somehow,
him and drove away.
Right.
Yeah. And everybody assumed or speculated that it was Buster, but there was never any evidence to prove that Buster had anything to do.
Thus the settlement, I suppose.
Right. So nothing's ever come of that, so I'm just going to move on from that.
Okay.
So all of these events happen leading up to the murders.
Right.
And to really...
I see where you're going with
and
this.
And really understand the Murdoch family. They had been in power there. And when I say in power, in South Carolina, we have solicitors, not district attorneys, but solicitors. It kind of is the same role. and their family had served as the solicitor for the 14th Circuit in South Carolina that included like Hampton County, the Beaufort area. And so they were the law, essentially,
right,
in that area.
And they were on both sides of it, too, because they would act as defense attorneys, too, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
In South Carolina, you could be a volunteer prosecutor, which Alec Murdoch was,
right,
and be a defense attorney, which is kind of like that in Alabama, because I also serve as the town prosecutor of Cedar Bluff.
Right.
So, obviously, I'm not doing anything like they were.
Well, oh, definitely. That's the only parallel there, right?
But then you can't, yes, you can't accept cases where you're defending someone in Cedar Bluff. Like, that's just...
Right, exactly.
There's still... Mm-hmm. Is that an ethical thing or is that a legal thing in Alabama?
It's maybe both, but it's okay. Mainly ethical.
Yeah. Okay.
I've had to withdraw from a lot of cases that dealt in Cedar Bluff because I work so closely, sure, with the police officers.
Gotcha.
Everything like that. So yeah, we do have to withdraw if we're appointed someone.
But they didn't have to.
So they probably would have. It's just, okay, they might not have had a conflict.
I gotcha.
And if it's family and not you're the same person, you know, I guess
I gotcha. Okay.
Right.
But if you're gonna work a scam, I guess it's better to work both sides of the law, yeah, right? I mean, yeah, he has been convicted of that, and he's admitted that he's a crook. So it's better to work both sides if you're gonna do that, I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So these murders happened June 7th. We talked about this roadside shooting, and then in September, when this roadside shooting occurred.
Mm-hmm.
What ended up happening, like I said, was he ended up resigning or being fired from his law firm for allegations of stealing money. Okay, so then we get into 2022. Alec Murdoch is formally indicted for the murders of Paul and Maggie Murdoch. So the defense filed for a speedy trial, and so that was in late of 2022. And they start this trial in January of 2023.
Okay.
So it was extremely fast.
Wow.
Yeah.
Extremely fast. Like I said, Paul Murdoch had been indicted for those boating accidents, and he had never made it to trial because of mm-hmm. COVID and everything. Mm-hmm. But this was an insanely quick pace.
And that's probably just, hopefully, they don't have enough time to open all the closet doors and find all the skeletons if we hurry up and get this over with, right?
Yes.
Right, right.
Definitely, yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. The defense was probably banking on the state not being prepared.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Because the state, like y'all have talked about on several episodes, the state has the burden of proving that he's guilty.
Right.
And so I just want to go through a little bit of the trial. And
yeah,
y'all stop me because I want to go through some of the evidence. Because there was a lot, but some of the big pieces of evidence. Mm-hmm. The main thing, and this is what I'm going to end up talking about, for the appeal purposes.
Right.
So one of the big things is they brought in all of these witnesses that were financial victims of the financial crimes that Alec committed.
Mm-hmm.
He stole around $9 million. Some of that has never even been found. But what he was doing, he had had several scams, but he was basically stealing money from his clients. And he ended up getting 27 years, I believe, in state court for those crimes.
Right.
And then 40 years in federal prison. So he's never getting out of prison
mm-hmm.
for the
yeah.
crime.
He's what, in his mid-50s-ish?
Right. Right.
Okay.
So, and the reason I bring up the financial crimes is this trial lasted 6 weeks, and it was a murder trial.
Mm-hmm.
But they spent 12 days bringing in those financial victims and having them testify to the impact of what he had stolen, how that affected them. And the trial judge let this in.
Okay.
Mm.
And I know y'all have talked about evidence before, what's been let in. I mean, what are y'all's thoughts on that?
So far, I say you've got to, if you go into a murder trial and say this guy shot his wife and his son, and you're sitting on the jury, you're going to say, that sounds ridiculous. Why would he do that? Well, I've got to explain why he did that. Here's his motive. And it's because he's been a thief his whole life and he was about to catch up with him and he had to kill the witnesses.
Yeah, but that doesn't go like...
That's the question, I guess,
it
right?
It seems like a thin way to have to do with a murder. I don't know. Right. I guess you're trying to show up. The motive was
exactly.
He's broke and he's...
But
yeah,
desperate to not
like
have...
12 days of
whew,
it.
And the big thing is, like Scott said, you don't have to prove motive. Motive is an element of murder.
Okay.
And you have this character evidence. So the trial judge has to decide whether or not to let certain character evidence in. And at some point, it becomes too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
12 days for financial crimes.
Yeah.
Right.
And
well, let me ask you, Cade, if you were the judge in this trial, would you have allowed that in?
I would have allowed some of it because you can show motive, but 12 days is
too much.
Overcooked.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Okay. Overcooked. I mean, is the argument that it's just unduly prejudicial? Like, is that what?
Right, right. It's more prejudicial than probative.
Let me ask a question that we may have to delete if I implicate somebody accidentally.
Oh, Lord.
You said already, we know that the Murdoch family has been the law in this district for 100 years. I don't know who the judge was in this case. Is there any chance that the judge was in on letting them do it on purpose so they'd have something to appeal later?
I don't think so at all. This judge, Clifton Newman,
judge was fair and square,
respected.
10-4.
Okay.
And then after this trial, he ended up retiring. But he has a well-known reputation.
I mean, I hope that wasn't the case, that you weren't going to get to that. But
no, that's a good question to ask, and I think that's a lot of question. I mean, I think that's a question that a lot of people would ask.
Okay.
Did you have any direct experience with this judge?
Not with this judge.
Okay.
And not with any of the judges that I'm going to talk about.
Okay.
Except for the Supreme Court justices.
Okay.
When we had our admission ceremony, they're the ones that host that, swear us in.
Gotcha.
So, let's see. Where was I at with the...
Sorry, we keep interrupting.
The 12 days of the financial discussion.
Okay, so the financial evidence, so they let all of this in. Some more of the evidence that I want to talk about is the guns. And I believe y'all talked about this before, but they were never found.
Right.
So there were two murder weapons, and Alec Murdoch is the only one on trial for murder. And they haven't even implicated that anyone else was involved. The state hasn't. Which is unusual. Two murder weapons.
I see.
One shooter.
Right.
And it happened so close in time, too. It's not like this was later in the day, another murder weapon used. It happened almost instantaneously.
That's the part that's always got me. Mm-hmm. Two guns, one shooter. It just
doesn't seem right. And the bodies are not together. It's not like, like, was it Paul that was out near the dog cages?
Right.
And
Paul
then
the dog kennels and a feed shed.
And then Maggie was in the house, the main house.
Maggie was out in the field.
Oh, she was out in the field like she was running.
Yeah.
That's what the speculation was.
So she was still down in that same area.
Oh, okay.
If you see the crime scene photos, they're not too far apart. But it's like she was running away from where Paul had been shot and killed.
So we are to believe that he's double-fisted guns. Shooting one of them and then shooting the other one, right? Essentially, is that what we're...
I know a bunch of people that do that.
Well, I mean, Yosemite Sam.
I was... Okay, that's one.
But I'm just saying, like, is that kind of what the thought is?
Well, in the Hulu documentary or dramatization, they show Alec had placed two guns down there.
Okay.
And he shoots Paul with one. And in that documentary, he sets the other one down calmly and then picks the rifle up and then shoots Maggie with the rifle.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like I said, that's a dramatization because these guns were never found.
Okay.
And part of the evidence of the trial, they bring in numerous guns. They have a huge blown up photo of about 20 shotguns, rifles, pistols, and they're showing all of this to the jury. But what do these weapons have to do?
Okay, I'm with you there.
With the murders, because these weren't the murder weapons.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
I get it.
And there was some conjecture in the trial because the rifle was a 300 Blackout, a specific rifle that the family did own, and they supposedly had two of them.
Sure they did, because they've still got one of them, I'll bet.
Right, they have one. One was Buster's Christmas present, one was Paul Murdoch's Christmas present. Oddly enough, Paul Murdoch's went missing prior to these murders. It was stolen out of his truck, allegedly.
Was it the day before?
It wasn't the day before.
Okay.
This was a year or so before.
Okay.
And then the other was a 12-gauge shotgun, which is a very common shotgun. But my point is they brought in all of these weapons, They had nothing to do with the murder.
Yeah, that's a little fishy. Mm-hmm. Or I mean, I guess you try and you ask the judge if you can do it, and if the judge lets you, then you do it.
Well, and I guess you're just trying to show that they do own guns similar to what shot both of these victims.
Yeah.
We don't know which one. We're not pointing at a murder weapon, but they do have guns like this. I guess. I'm just grasping there. But right. Definitely can see how we're opening all kinds of doors for appeals.
Right. So so then I'll move on to the next piece of evidence that they put in was all this cell phone data. So they end up finding Maggie's phone off of the property, away from the property, like someone had thrown it outside.
That was the one they found. Okay.
And Paul Murdoch's phone was still found on his body. Mm-hmm. And y'all discussed this. I think y'all might have played the video, but there was a video of Alec Murdoch talking at the kennels right before the murders. I believe it was like 5 minutes before the prosecution says that Maggie Murdoch's phone and Paul Murdoch's phone locked forever.
Okay.
So they have that video of Alec being down there, and that really was the biggest piece of evidence for the prosecution. But the cell phone data, they brought in this expert.
I see you doing air quotes.
Because we know those well.
He testifies that the test that he did was sitting there flipping his phone and seeing when it would turn on in his office. And it was all this data about the orientation and when the phone turns on.
Yeah.
And you can see all of that. But they essentially say, the prosecution, that Alec's driving down the road when he goes to his mother's house to create an alibi. Mm-hmm. He tosses the phone out. And there were all these tests about, was the phone, if you're driving down the road, does the phone, and throw it out, does it turn on?
Got it. Mm-hmm. Does that motion
right
activate the screen?
But it, I mean, y'all sitting here, does that sound very credible to y'all, just to, sitting in the office flipping?
It didn't work on mine just now.
I don't think that would make you an expert.
Right. Right. So they let this data in.
Okay.
There's also this GMC data from the car that Alec was driving that the prosecution didn't get until during the trial. So there's all this data and this huge timeline that the jury has that they plotted all of this out.
It seems like the GMC data would be good stuff.
Right, and it was, but they try to match it with the cell phone, and when it's being tossed out, and could Alec have actually tossed it?
Mm-hmm.
But one question I have is why would he take Maggie's phone but not Paul's?
Yeah, but they don't have like GPS on the phone. Like, what is the
find my friends?
Yeah, what's the significance of it turning on when you toss it out?
Yeah, so they were trying to say that when he tosses it out, the particular place he could have been, I believe that they were just trying to say with that he was the one that tossed it out.
Just because he's in fact, his location with the phone's
right. Yeah, he's right. In fact driving by on his way to his mom's.
Yeah.
Right, right. So they get that in. The last piece of evidence I want to talk about before I move on to the appeal is, there's all of this footage with him having on clean clothes. Mm-hmm. And in a video that was shown to the jury, he had on different clothes earlier in that day. And the prosecution made a big deal out of this. And I'm not sure about y'all, but you know, when I come home from court, I'm not going to stay in those clothes.
Sure, same, yeah.
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 Even if it's a casual day, I'm just wearing a golf polo, mm-hmm. I'm going to put on my comfortable clothes when I get home.
Yeah, I've got a pair of jammy bottoms nobody has ever seen because they are at home only.
Yeah.
But they're comfy to me.
Oh, gosh. When I walk through my door, that clock is ticking. Okay? I can't get these clothes
like
changed
Mr.
fast
Rogers
enough.
At the strip club. It's gone fast.
It's out. Yeah.
Did he have on a suit earlier in the day or just like a button-up situation?
He had on like a button-up situation.
But if you're going to go outside in your backyard.
And go out to the dog
goof
kennels.
Around, But go see your mom.
If he had on a long, even if he just had on a long sleeve shirt, I could see the wanting to get out of that, especially like it's hot where he's at, and it's, you know, he's a larger man. I'm sure, you know, he's not keeping that.
He's sweaty.
He looks sweaty.
I know I'm speculating, but
he looks sweaty.
He looks sweaty a lot in a lot of his pictures.
Well, he was sweating a lot of the time when we saw him because he was charged with murder.
Well, I mean, you know, as you do, I sweat a lot myself, but I'm in menopause, so it's different. But I feel for him in that sense.
Understood.
Sweating.
So do I.
All right. So go ahead, Cade.
Yeah. So a lot of the evidence, like I just laid out, and there was a lot more, but it was mainly circumstantial.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Okay.
Really, the biggest thing that they had was that video that Alex lied about, that he was down there when he said he wasn't. So a lot of it was circumstantial. And their theory, the prosecution, was that, and this is what lead prosecutor Creighton Waters said in his opening statements, there was a storm coming. And all of this that we talked about on this timeline was leading up to the murders, him stealing the money, being in trouble with his law firm, all kinds of things like that. And they say that their motive, like you said, Scott, was that all of this financial information, all of these things were coming to a head, and
that was because the civil suits had been filed, right? There was going to be discovery, and he was going to have to turn over bank records and whatever else.
Right. He was actually set for a hearing on June 10th, which was just a couple of days later.
Well, that's suspicious.
But the prosecution says that he murdered his wife and son to create a distraction from all this other trouble he was in.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, and I think a lot of cases y'all have covered, the number one suspect is always either the spouse or the person that last was with
right.
With
the last person to see them.
Mm-hmm. So to me, when I first heard that, when I was sitting watching the trial, I thought that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. Because, and he's an attorney, he knows that they're going to look at him first.
Yeah.
So why is your whole theory hinge on it was a distraction?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I could even see, you know, all right, so you're trying to create a distraction. All this stuff's about to come out about you. I could see, you know, shooting your wife. But your son, too? It just seems weird, you know, because it's usually the husband. Wife dies, husband probably did it.
But if the son dies, the civil case goes away just like that.
Right, but why Maggie? So then you flip it and go,
because she saw him kill her son.
Maybe so. Maybe.
I mean, while we're speculating.
Right, but we have essentially no proof of this.
Right.
Is that
right? It was all circumstantial.
Yeah.
So after a 6-week trial, the jury comes back, I believe it was 3 or 4 hours guilty.
Ooh, right. God, 3 or 4 hours. That's always, I mean, if you're on trial and they're quick, you got to be thinking, oh crap. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And then the next day he's sentenced to life in prison.
Well, he asked for a speedy trial. And he got one.
He got a speedy verdict, too.
Look, I mean, I heard this. I was watching a true crime documentary last night, and I don't know how well it applies here, but it was a defense or a prosecution argument. It said, look, if I go to bed and there's no snow on the ground, and I wake up the next morning and there's snow on the ground, I didn't see it snow, but I know that it snowed while I was asleep.
Oh, right. I definitely think that just because it's circumstantial evidence doesn't mean it can't be good evidence.
Yeah.
But you also have to have something, too, to go with it. I think that give me a fingerprint. Give me a something. At least a murder weapon in murder trial.
It's beyond a reasonable doubt. Is a high burden of proof.
It's a murder
proof.
Trial. Yeah. I get it.
It's a high burden of proof.
And if you're going into a murder trial with just circumstantial evidence, well, again, here we've got another guilty verdict. We've talked about them multiple times here. We're like, how in the world did they get a guilty verdict?
Yeah.
And you got to wonder if, you know, all was there a Murdoch fatigue going on in this area? Were they sick of this family? Were they just sick of him? Is he just not a likable dude? I mean, like, you know.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think that one of the biggest things, especially in the legal community, was this guy put a black eye on the legal community in South Carolina.
Right.
Yeah.
Stealing from his clients. And there were other issues going on as well. But you're exactly right. The community was mad at this guy. The legal community was, it was just,
No one liked him. No one was on his side.
No. But and here's where I'm going. Even the most heinous person deserves a right to
absolutely
partial trial.
Yeah. Correct. Correct.
That's and that was a long recap to get here. But that's
all right.
That's mainly what I wanted to talk about is right after he's guilty, they of course say that they're going to appeal it. And, you know, they're probably going to do one of the ones that y'all have talked about before, ineffective assistance of counsel, things like that. And I'm not sure how long after, but there was rumblings about jurors being tampered with and things of that nature. And you kind of think nothing's going to come about of that. But the defense files a huge brief asking for a new trial based on jurors being tampered with. The evidence, like I talked about, being let in. And so South Carolina sets it for an evidentiary hearing. The first step in an appeal. And so they bring former Chief Justice Gene Toll out of retirement to hear this evidentiary hearing.
Was there a reasoning behind bringing him in? Was there a reason for picking him, I guess?
Well, it's actually Gene Toll was a female. No, that's okay. So they bring her in, and she was a former Chief Justice of the South Carolina Supreme Court.
Gotcha.
So she has a stellar reputation, very respectable.
Everybody's going
to
accept whatever decision she makes.
All right, we're bringing in the respectable retired lady judge.
And I feel like a lot of times with connected people, it's like, they'll bring in retired judges because they don't have anything to win, lose. They're not going to get elected. Right. They're not going up for election anytime, right. You know, so you don't have any kind of...
Right. No accusations of
and
underhanded
her
dealings.
Reputation is good, and so that
and
makes
they have
sense.
Time. Yeah. You know, like, the court system's full. Like, they
she's
have
retired. Yeah. Got right. it. Okay, right. Great.
Exactly. So this evidentiary hearing happens in January of 2024. So... At this evidentiary hearing, they talk about several of the things that we just discussed about the evidence. But what we hadn't heard before is about the jurors. And if you followed the trial, then you probably saw that one of the jurors, one of the 12 jurors that were seated, was removed right before they started deliberations.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And if you follow it closely, she's known as the Egg Lady.
Oh, yeah.
Because... when she was removed, she said, can I go back and get my eggs from the jury room?
She had brought everybody a dozen eggs or something and wanted them back since she was kicked out-ish.
Something. I don't know why you would bring eggs or any type of groceries or anything like that to jury duty. But
I actually have a friend, Mariah Alexis Emmett, brought me a dozen eggs about a month ago. She has chickens at
like
home.
Fresh eggs? Yeah.
Yes. She had more eggs than...
Well, those
place
fresh eggs
scramble
are
and
like gold, I guess.
That'll
I don't
happen
know.
To you.
I had one this morning for breakfast. It was delicious.
But you know what? It also just drives home this rural little community.
Right.
With that juror saying that. I mean, it makes sense to
exactly.
me. Of course she did. But why was she dismissed?
So it's kind of debated. I mean, I think there was a Facebook post that they thought had generated from her or someone in her family. But there were several people that said she was talking about the case.
Oh,
so,
no.
So she was essentially removed because...
Were they sequestered?
They were.
Okay.
They were.
Well, you're not... Even if you're not, you're not supposed to go back and talk about what's
well,
going on.
I was just... It would be... It seems like it would be easier to end up speaking about it to someone if you weren't sequestered. But at the other end of that is, if you do talk about it and you are sequestered, there's a better chance somebody's going to overhear it and maybe tell the bailiff that's... your right. security details.
Well, and if you're putting it on Facebook, then...
That doesn't help
and
either.
They, and good grief. Might have just been partially. I can't remember okay. that exactly, but in any matter, she wasn't supposed to be talking about the
yeah,
case.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And there were these allegations that she was. So she was removed okay. right before deliberations.
Okay.
Which, even if we don't know all of this other information, that's kind of a hard thing. I mean, mm-hmm. right before deliberations, a juror is removed.
But we've got, what, two or four alternates, and they've been in the jury room or right. in the courtroom the whole time. They know everything else. It's not like you have to start over to catch them up, right?
Right, okay. right. So they put an alternate in there. But where this becomes important is the Egg Lady, after the trial, she goes to the defense attorneys, and she said, hey, I was told some things that made me on the fence about my verdict. And then I was removed, and the lady that we're going to talk about is Rebecca Becky Hill, mm-hmm. which was the clerk of court for this trial. She was a clerk of court in Colleton County. And so the clerk of court, they're responsible for coordinating things between the judge and the jury, but they're not supposed to be talking about the case with the jury.
That's what we would call the circuit clerk, right?
Right.
Okay. Yeah, that's Dwayne Amos.
Right.
Right. So they arrange, you know, getting lunch and letting them know what time they're supposed to be back, things like that, but they're not supposed to have any kind of discussion with the jury. And so the egg lady, she tells the defense that Becky Hill had approached her and said things like, oh, don't be confused or misled. Don't look at his body language. Pay close attention to his body language. She had also asked her, you know, which way are you leaning? And obviously now we know she wrote a book.
Yeah.
But during the trial, we didn't know that. So the defense is going to argue that she is doing these things in order to get a guilty verdict so it'll help sell her book. Mm. And she goes on the Today Show and all these other interviews because she's famous.
Hmm.
Well, I think I'm unfortunately for Becky Hill, I think, Hall or Hill?
Hill.
Becky Hill. I guess we know how this ends. And I read that book about 3 months ago. Cade was telling me about it, and he loaned it to me, and I read it. But I forgot most of it by now.
I thought you were going to have some profound comment about this
exactly
book.
The opposite. Wow. I have forgotten most of it, and thank goodness Cade is here.
I'm glad you didn't tear it in half. Climactic. Right. Yeah.
I was counting on you adding to that. Yeah.
Sorry, you should have let me know.
So Becky Hill, does Becky admit to any of this, doing this?
At first, she didn't.
Okay. Quickly, we need to talk about our sponsors because we haven't time on this show. And we have some great sponsors. We have Cherokee Family Healthcare. Want me to tell you guys about them?
Yeah, hit the short version.
Just a little bit. They treat patients of all ages. You can call 256-266-1021 to schedule an appointment. Anything, if you got the flu, oh, bless you, but go see them. Weight loss, preventative testing, just give the staff a call there at Cherokee Family Health Clinic. Connie, we love you. Thank you for being a sponsor. 256-266-1021.
And we certainly love our other sponsor, one of our other two sponsors, Greg Oliver at Go Realty. He's got a terrific list of properties of any kind that you want in Northwest Alabama or Northwest Georgia. Give him a call at 256-504-3847 or visit GoRealtyAlabama.com. And we've got one more sponsor that Katie's going to tell us about.
We always really appreciate the Cherokee County Chamber of Commerce. Remember, if you're planning your 2026 summer vacation, why don't you do a staycation? Stay right here in Cherokee
County. Love it. That's what I'm doing.
With us. Love it.
Yeah, they've got everything. They've got, you know, lodgings. We got rentals. You can have fun really all over town. Just visit them at Cherokee-chamber.org, and they've got all the links. They'll let you know. And guys, we are sorry to do this to you on a cliffhanger, but we kept Cade entirely too long. We just could not quit talking, and this episode ended up being a two-parter, so don't miss next week to get the full update on the Murdoch murders and what's going on now in the case, and hear from good friend of the show, Kay Gossett, and his expertise. We have officially dubbed him the Murdoch murder expert for this podcast. So come on back next week. Thanks for listening. Find us on Facebook, Instagram. Visit our website. Send us an email, truecrimeoneasystreet@gmail.com. Thanks.